Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Ward. I'm riding solo today, but you know I don't always, so it's all good. The Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And as you know, for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the members of PAC Inc. And also go to the tab that says the code so you can click on it and learn more about the codes of conduct that PAC Inc. created for Black America to help Black America work more better as a cohesive unit. Also, as you know, subscribe to the Freedom Train on iTunes and Google Play. That way you can get the episodes coming directly to your phone. Visit the Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com to learn more about myself, my co-host Patrick Irvin, and Jamie Basham. Follow the Freedom Train on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Follow us on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like our Facebook page. And always, last but not least, subscribe to our Freedom Train YouTube channel. That way you can stay plugged into whatever we got going on the Freedom Train, as you know. Because we like having fun and we like making sure that you stay informed on what's going on in the community and the great people that we have in our community. So as you always know, we got a reputation for having great people on our show. And today is no exception. When we reach out, we really reach out. So today we have, I'm excited because we get to delve into the world of comics. We have the creator of the Afrocentric Comics, Ms. Jewel Smith. She's a writer, a culture worker, an educator, and this magazine that she has, Afrocentric, is an award-winning magazine. And just to give you a little more information about Jewel before she speaks, she has given talks about the relationship between using comics to address racial issues, gender equality, political literacy, and humor at the Schomburg Center, New York Comic Con, Studio Museum of Harlem, Baltimore Book Festival, and the Cooper Union. As I said, she uses her practice to focus on the links between racial justice, gender equality, and political literacy. And without further ado, you know, our studio audience, give her a hand for Jewel Smith, the creator of the Afrocentric Comics.
Man,
how you doing?
Thank you. Thank you for that warm reception. I appreciate that.
No problem. Thank you for your creation, for what you're doing, what you're bringing to this world for our people. Thank you very much. I'm excited. So let's get into it. So as I said, you are the creator and the writer of the Afrocentric comic book series. So could you give us a little more background information about yourself and how you became interested in starting your own comic book as a black woman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Afrocentric really was birthed out of my experiences teaching at community colleges in the Bay Area.
Okay.
And what I learned very quickly is that a lot of my students responded quite well to the comic books I was giving them. Mm-hmm. I was actually teaching a class that focused on the prison industrial complex, and what I noticed is that my students would read the comic books, but they wouldn't necessarily read the long essays that I gave them.
Right.
So it was really in that moment that I started to shift the way that I thought about reaching, you know, students more specifically, mm-hmm. but also a greater audience. So comic books really became this medium that I used to try to reach more people. And I was using this comic book called The Real Cost of Prisons. I'm not sure if you've heard about it. But it's a three-part series that delves into, you know, why the U.S. is the greatest incarcerator in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a little history on the war on drugs. It also focuses on women in prison, who are the fastest-growing prison population, and prison towns. And
okay.
It really breaks down a complicated social phenomenon. And
okay.
what I realized is that my students were not only reading it, but they were actually passing it on to their family members. And that was really kind of like an aha moment for me. So, you know, in that moment of teaching at Laney College in Oakland was really where I got inspired to start to do my own comic book. And
okay.
I originally intended it to be a curriculum, but then it turned out to be, you know, closer to me thinking about my own experiences. And I loosely based two of the main characters off of myself and my brother,
okay.
Naima
okay.
and Miles Tepper.
Okay. Yeah. I had a chance to read up on the characters, and I kind of want to get your take. We go more into it, but off top already, I really love Naima and Kwame. So just off top, so
right,
and especially because in my group of friends, they say I'm the one with the spontaneous Tourette's or something like that. So any character that mm-hmm. has that as well. That's
mm-hmm.
me. That's me.
Yes, definitely.
So,
yeah.
So you also, like I said earlier, you're also a writer. So just focusing on you as a writer for right now, how long have you been writing? What inspired you to write? And when did you first realize that your writing was good enough for you to pursue your dreams?
You know, it was never a moment where I was thinking like, you know, I want to be this, you know, award-winning writer.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that kind of propelled me into this. It was really, you know, wanting to respond to some of the things that were going on in the world and tell stories that were humorous about issues that are not so humorous.
Right.
So that was really the goal. It wasn't like, oh, I'm a writer and I just need to get this writing out. That was never really my motivation.
Mm-hmm.
The impulse has always been to use humor to talk about issues that are tough.
Right. Know? Right. Okay. Yeah, I get that because especially now the climate in the country now, it's real tough to talk about certain things, even though I do feel like it has gotten significantly better, but it's still kind of tough to talk about things. But in that medium of comedy, using that comedy, where we are able to, you know, bring people together and sit down and kind of really talk about issues. You're not really talking, but you're talking about them. But the manner that is given to you, it makes it easier for people to digest. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's really like the power of humor. And it wasn't something that I thought about originally as I was writing, but
right.
over time it became this thing that, you know, really like a tool to say things that are hard to say, but saying them in a humorous way allows people to kind of let their guard down.
Right.
And that was really like the focus of,
okay.
of a lot of the later part of Halfrocentric.
Okay. Okay, and also, kind of going back to what you were saying earlier about your experience as a teacher, as I'm listening to you, kind of, you know, give you your kudos for being a teacher who actually pays attention to her students and the different ways that they take in information, because
mm-hmm.
not many teachers do that. I know through my experiences in school, not many of my teachers really paid attention to the different ways that we learned. So
mm-hmm.
I definitely have to give you credit for that, because I can guarantee you the impact that had on those students' lives really helped them become a lot more successful than they probably would have been. But you paid attention to that. So that's, you know, I appreciate that just as a citizen. you doing that as an instructor, because most instructors, well, I'm not going to say most, but a lot don't. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, like, for me, you know, when I was teaching, I was a young teacher, and I really wanted to have this impact that a lot of the professors that I had on me. So
mm-hmm.
I came in like, yo, I'm about to tell you about the revolution. Like,
right.
your whole mindset is going to change. And that really didn't happen. And so I realized that I didn't have the tools that I thought I did,
uh-huh.
because to have a level of knowledge and information is one thing, but to be able to disseminate it and
yes.
have solid pedagogy really helps. And that was something that I didn't have, and so I had to kind of learn that myself.
Yes. Now, that's important, because we talk about that a lot here on the show, about being able to accumulate information, knowledge and information, but how can you disseminate it to the people who you're trying to get this information to? Does it make sense to them? Can you really effectively communicate this information? And being able to see that in yourself and adjust that, that's a credit to yourself as well. It's like, it's not ego-driven. You're not there just for a paycheck or for ego. You're actually there for the students. So.
I don't think anybody in teaching is there for a paycheck.
Right. Right. So as you are also a cultural worker. So this is my first time hearing this term. So could you explain to me and our listeners what a cultural worker is, and how did you become active as a cultural worker?
I like when I use that word to describe myself, I just think of it as someone who's trying to shift culture or change culture.
Okay.
And so I see that happening through, you know, the comic strip and the comic book.
Okay.
Afrocentric.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Because one, you come with, you know, African American culture, black culture in America is one of the most popular cultures, one of the cultures that kind of push other cultures to be more creative or even look at African American culture. So you're taking that approach, especially with your comic books, because comics are big and it's growing, and a lot more black people are admitting that they're into comics and also getting into comics, so that using that medium is a great medium. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, so digging more into the comic books, I want to know more about it. So we touched on it earlier about some of your characters. So can you tell us more about the characters in your book, what their names are, and what role did they play in you telling the story that you're telling in each comic?
Yeah, so basically Afrocentric follows four kind of disgruntled undergrads of color as they navigate this fictitious university, Ronald Reagan University, that's, you know, based in Oakland, California.
Okay.
And Naima Pepper and Miles Pepper are brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of have differing views of the world. Naima Pepper thinks of herself in the vein of, you know, the Angela Davises, bell hooks, Audre Lordes of the world. And Miles Pepper is a little bit more apathetic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really took a lot of cues from the Boondocks and
right.
the Huey character and mm-hmm. the Riley character and that sort of balance between them.
Right.
And so, but again, like I said, I loosely based it off of myself and my brother. And so I use those characters to really, I originally like started using them as ways to talk about different political philosophies, but then I realized that was a little bit too static and kind of came off really didactic, right? So it's like, I believe this and I'm, you know, hardline this way. And so what I tried to do later in the books is really provide a level of nuance to each character and introduce contradictions.
Okay.
And that was something that I, you know, as a writer, my background was more in academic writing, so this was new to me. So it was a kind of shift for me to really try to humanize each character. So they each have best friends that we follow as well.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other characters is Elizondo, and he's best friends with Miles, and Renee is the best friend of Naima. And so we see them in a lot of different scenes kind of interacting, and they each have their own differing kind of like views on the world. And so we get to see how they navigate the views kind of based in large part on their own identities. Elizondo is like a second generation Chicano living in California. Renee is, she's mixed black and Indonesian and is also, you know, coming out as queer, but because she never quote unquote comes out.
Right.
But she really is more of a masculine presenting character.
Okay.
And I really wanted to showcase a lot of different looks and a lot of different identities with the book, because I felt like that was something that was missing, you know, not only from the Boondocks, which I love deeply, but also a lot of the comics that I would read. And I was like, yo, I'm from the Bay, so like if you're gonna have these different characters, like you might as well reflect kind of like what you see in the world. So the best friends are, you know, amalgamations of folks that I've met before, as well as the other kind of supporting characters, Kwame and Rasan.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they're amalgamations of folks that I've met doing activist work and things like that. So,
okay,
yeah,
okay, that's real cool. Was it difficult to be able to create these personalities and bring these different personalities to life for each character? Was that process difficult?
No, because like I said, I originally created the characters based on different political philosophies, and you can kind of see this more in the beginning of the books, like
mm-hmm.
volumes 1 and 2, where, you know, like Elizondo has like a level of like Chicano nationalism. Kwame is, you could kind of describe him as Black nationalist.
Okay.
But as I kept writing, I really want, again, I wanted to highlight some of their contradictions, right? So no one is one political philosophy to the death, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to make sure that they had these other things going on, and also like a level of humanity that,
right,
you know, they get sad, they get happy, and all these different moods. So that was definitely something that I wanted to showcase.
Right.
But no, it wasn't particularly difficult. It was just pulling from my experiences, really.
Okay. Now, what's cool is I feel like I've met all of these characters throughout my life.
mm-hmm.
Most of them in college, but I feel like I've met all these characters because as I was going through your website and I was reading information, I was kind of, you know, as I'm reading the description of each character, laughing and kind of picturing different people who would fit these characters in my head. So I think it's a great comic book. Everybody needs to support it and make sure you learn more about Hatful Century, because I'm telling you, it's good information and it's a great comic. So
thank you. Appreciate that.
No problem. No problem. So, correct me if I'm wrong. You've released 3 or 4 volumes as of now.
So, we released the 4th volume in 2016.
Okay.
And then this year was the year that we released the trade paperback. So, what that means is that we have a book out now that is volumes 1 through 4. And I actually redid volume 1 because
right.
I wrote volume 1, I really wrote it like 2010, 2011, and then
mm-hmm.
I released it, I self-published it and released it 2011. And, you know, it's just like any piece of work, your first work, you have your own critiques of it. So I wanted to make sure that it was polished and looked good for the world. So I redid it. I redid
mm-hmm.
volume 1. With the help of Ron Nelson, who did the illustrations on volume 2, 3, and 4. So volume 1 was a different illustrator, so I wanted to make sure that everything looked uniform. So we redid volume 1 for this for the release of the new book. And so yeah, everything looks, I think it looks, you know, infinitely better than it originally did. So I'm
right.
pretty proud of the product.
It's like I say, I think it's an amazing product that all of us need to support. So, could you, if you don't mind, could you give us a synopsis of, you don't have to go through all the volumes, kind of a synopsis of one or a couple of the volumes and what people could expect when they're reading the comic book?
Yeah, so volume one is really an introduction to the four main characters, and I take a lot of cues from different comic books and pop culture, mm-hmm. and for volume one, this new redone volume one, I took some cues from Love and Rockets.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with Love and Rockets.
No, I'm not.
But it's basically, I mean, it's old school, like, It's a Chicano punk comic that came out like in the 80s.
Okay.
And it's based around these characters that live in the Central Valley of California, and there's some ties to Mexico, but a lot of what Love and Rockets does is very kind of like talking heads. It's a lot of talking, not less action and more kind of talking between characters.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that they introduce the characters I really like. So we took some like visual cues from them to introduce the characters for this new volume one. And so we just get a sense of like who are these characters, where are they coming from, what's kind of like their background. So that's volume one, and then volume two and three is a larger saga around gentrification. And so basically we find Naima trying to stop gentrification in and around the university. And so she kind of enlists her friends who are reluctantly involved to stop it. And one of the things that they try to do is create the first and only anti-gentrification social networking site in the world called MyDiaspora.com. So we're kind of like, we follow their, you know, their resistance to the gentrification. And then, so that's sagas two and three. And then volume four, we see Naima Pepper get a senior internship as a racial translator. So she translates black people to white people and white people to black people. And it's meant to be a really funny take on on race, basically.
Yeah. No, as you say that, I'm laughing because I'm a racial translator. Myself in my town. I'm in Tallahassee, Florida, and it's a small country town, about 300,000 people, and being able to communicate how black people talk to white people, how white people talk to black people, and it's just funny as you say that, because I'm just thinking about my own experience as a racial translator. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, one of the lines in volume four, when Naima gets the job, her boss says, you know, we picked you because you're mixed,
mm-hmm.
because you're mixed black and white. And she says, well, any black person can do this job. Like,
right.
We know white people better than you know yourselves.
Right, so, right.
It's really like, you know, it's like some jabs at what it means to navigate the world as a black person, really.
Exactly. I mean, but I think that your comic book will help others with their navigation through the world as a black person, but also be able to kind of get better ideas and concepts about the reality of what's going on in our communities, as you hit on gentrification. Gentrification is everywhere. It's even here in this town. Our historic black section of this town is being built up with college housing and everything. So putting that in comic book form, and you already know the results of, because when people read it and they get caught up in it, and you already have the picture, so that helps with the imagination even more, then they become emotionally attached to the characters. You got them. That's great. And then that's great writing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. That's good. So, your comic book, you have a collection of people who help you put it together.
Yeah.
And so, could you tell us a little more about your team? You have Mr. Ronald Nelson and Mr. Mike Hampton. So, could you tell us a little more about them too, as well as any others who may play a role in making Afrocentric the success it is?
Yeah, so Ronald Nelson, he does the illustrations. So that means that he does the penciling and the inking mm-hmm. of the characters, and he also plays a huge role in terms of storytelling. Because effectively what he's doing is he's getting my scripts and turning them into, you know, visual representations. So he plays a huge role in making Afrocentric come to life. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you see the work, you've seen it.
So right.
It's highly detailed. It's very,
right.
It has a lot of slick lines. It's more, I would say, like less cartoony and more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
But it also takes a little bit of some cues from the manga world. So Ron really does his thing on the comic book and the comic strips. And then Mike Hampton, he does the coloring and the lettering. So he does the grayscales, he does the color covers, he adds the text from the script. And yeah, we're a three-person team, and you know, that's a pretty small team to be putting out comics, but we've been doing it now for 6 years.
Okay, that's great. And so how did you meet these two gentlemen, and what made you decide that, okay, I want to work with these guys to make Afrocentric a reality?
I was introduced to Ron through a friend, and I had already done Volume 1, and I told him what I was thinking about, and I was hype about where I thought Afrocentric could go. And he really believed in the project from the beginning. And so he's been on since 2011, 2012. Yeah, so he's been on for a while. And that's how I met him. And then Mike I knew through a friend of mine who also does comic books, and I knew he did coloring. So he's been on the team for 6 years, too.
Okay.
So that's, yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So the characters, who, mm-hmm. like, how did you come up with the actual look of the characters? Like, how did you all, what was that process like? Okay, this, I want her hair like this, I want this, like, how was that process?
Yeah, I mean, I had the initial concept, and what I did was I had a couple of different, like, character references.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I wanted Renee to be kind of queer presenting, and
right.
so I knew, but I also wanted to make sure that, you know, if you see her look, it's a little bit like boom bap, hip hop, 90s, East Coast feel. She's got like the baggy jeans, she's got the Tims, but she also has a tie, and she has bamboo earrings.
Right.
She also has short hair. I mean, all of that was like very specific in terms
right.
of what I wanted. And then Naima, of course, the thing that I knew about Naima that I wanted to highlight was that I wanted to make sure that she always had a picture of John Brown, the famous abolitionist,
right.
and always wore a Black Liberation wristband. And she's, you know, kind of femme presenting, she's got an afro, not quite Blaxploitation, but a few nods to Blaxploitation.
Right.
And then L, I knew I wanted to make sure that he was kind of like definitively Latino. And so there's certain cues that I took to make sure that, like, you knew their identities. Because,
right.
you know, when you're dealing in Black and white comics, it's not always clear, and so I wanted it to be clear, you know, in their costume. And then, you know, Miles has, you know, he wears his jeans and a shirt. His is pretty regular, but he always has drumsticks with him. And then Kwame is, you know, he wears jeans and a shirt, but he has a Nefertiti necklace.
Right.
So all of that is very purposeful. Rasan also, you know, when he's drawn in color, he has the Warriors colors too. So
okay.
a lot of it was, you know, very purposeful.
Okay. Now, what I think is hilarious is how you describe Renee's haircut as you call it, a mashup between Justin Bieber and Salt and Pepper in the Push It video era. That is hilarious.
Yeah, I was trying to like really kind of make sense of her look, and like I said, I have a lot of nods to like 90s hip hop because obviously I grew up in listening to 90s hip hop, so.
Right. So, yeah, I don't blame you. I want to brag on you for a little bit. Let you do some bragging for a little bit. Some, you know, free bragging. So, you were honored with the first annual Excellence in Comics and Graphic Novels Award at the African American Library and Museum of Oakland. So, what was that experience like, and how did winning that award help the visibility of your comic book as well as your overall mission with Half a Century?
You know, I'm not sure how much visibility it gave me, but I definitely literally cried through the whole speech and award process. It's a very weird feeling to be acknowledged for your work.
Right.
Like, unexpectedly. And so mm-hmm. my whole family was there, and that was...
And that's cool.
And that was a big deal. But yeah, it's a weird thing. It's like, you know, when you start a project, you're not necessarily thinking about, like, oh, I'm going to do this to get all these awards. Like, you know, you got to be driven by other things because
mm-hmm.
The awards may not come, you know.
That's true.
And the
that's
visibility true. May not come. So you have to really, like, think about what's that thing that's driving you to create. And I think that's what sustained me. But also, like, getting an award helps, too, because it's nice to be acknowledged.
Exactly.
You know?
Sometimes I feel like
you're doing it in isolation. So,
yes.
So it is nice. It does feel good, I have to admit.
Yeah, recognition does feel good. But as you were saying, you're also telling our people what can happen when you stay true to yourself, and as you say, stick to your grind, basically. Stick to what you're doing. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Just create whatever you're doing, create it, and not necessarily worry about the awards, but create, because you really never know what your creation is going to bring into your life. So just do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
There you go. So, you also won the Glyph Award. So, as a writer, even though you told us that you were never like the young child who always fantasized about writing, but as a writer, though, when you won the Glyph Award, how meaningful was that you for winning that for Volume 4 of Half a Century?
You know, it was unexpected,
mm-hmm.
and but I was very appreciative, and I was very humbled.
Right.
Again, it's not like I started it to win awards or whatever. It's just like I wanted to tell these stories, and I wanted to bring these characters to life. So again, it's nice to be acknowledged, and especially by a community of your peers, and
right.
that feels good.
Right.
And also, again, like, because a lot of the creation is like, in isolation, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I write the scripts by myself, and I write the stories by myself, and so, like, when the public sees it and they acknowledge it, again, it's like this, it's kind of a surreal feeling, like, oh, like, y'all feel this? Like, that's cool.
Right,
like,
right.
I had no idea. So, it's very validating.
Yes,
and
yes.
I was very surprised.
Like, oh, that's good.
But in a good way.
Right. that's great. I mean, as you said, when you sit down and put something together, put your time, your energy into it, and you know you want to make it as great as possible. And at first it may seem like no one is paying attention, and then when you do get recognized and acknowledged, and then such great ways as you have, it really does, you know, make you feel good, make you smile, and make you want to continue to move forward. So.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's, it is, like I said, it's like, you know, if you're creating something, you really have to be grounded in, like, what's the reason why I'm creating? And a lot of times I forget. And, you know, some of these awards remind me.
Right.
It reminds me, or if somebody, you know, online is like, "Yo, this is funny," or "I really like this comic strip or the comic book," it's a good reminder to kind of like keep pushing and creating.
It is, man. But once again, you've created something great, something that our community could benefit from. In the midst of all this chaos and other stuff that gets put out on the mainstream things, you stuck to your guns. You felt confident about what you wanted to do. You believe in yourself, your creativity, your work, and here you are. Here you are, successful, have a successful magazine, and more success to come. So that is great. So I do want to ask about what's the future of Afrocentric? What new things do you have coming up for the Afrocentric comic book and just the brand as a whole?
Yeah, well, the future, you know, what I'm going towards, and this is what I've been saying now for years, is really an animated series.
Okay.
That's the long-term goal. And so right now my thought process has really been to, like, grow the audience, and part of the way that I did that was by creating these comic strips. Because again, a comic book with a 3-person team takes us, to do a 24-page book takes us a little over a year from start to finish. And so the comic strips, you know, I put those out pretty much weekly, and that allows me to be consistent with my writing and also be consistent with people that are checking for Afrocentric. That's pretty much the thought behind it, is just really to create an audience and eventually be able to pitch it. And animation is its own kind of beast, because it can also be very time-consuming and costly. So, you know, it's like slow burn.
Yeah. And so you said you put the strips out weekly, and you put them out on your website?
Yeah, so I put them out on the website, but I encourage folks to go to the website and sign up for the newsletter, because I send it to people every Sunday, like a Sunday Funnies.
Okay.
I also post it on Instagram at Afrocentric.
Okay. And as far as with the weekly strips that you put out, how long does it take as far as the illustration and things? How long does that take to get put together with the story?
It's about a 2-week turnaround. It really kind of depends, but I would say two to three weeks.
Okay.
And that's, again, from start to finish. That's like from the script to the illustrations, to the coloring and lettering, about 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay. So
I do them in succession, so I write them kind of 4 at a time. So I'm not writing.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. And that was what I was going to ask, because if you're able to put them out like that, then of course you have to be doing more than one at a time. So.
Right.
But like you said, that's great, because you have something that will keep people engaged, keep people in the loop of what's going on, keep them attached to the characters, growing with the characters and things. And then when the comic book come, you know, you already have, like you said, people who are interested. So it's like the mixtape to the album. So that's great.
Cool.
Now, were you, or how were you able to overcome any doubt, ill feelings, or anything that you may have had that wasn't positive thoughts or feelings? How were you able to overcome those about starting your own comic book? And also, what advice would you give to young girls who are looking to follow in your footsteps, if not exactly in your footsteps, but following your footsteps as far as following your passion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm fully transparent. Like, I have doubts all the time.
Okay.
Like, all the time. And I think what keeps me going is just, like, getting back to, like, what is, like, why am I doing this in the first place? And when I get back to that, instead of focusing on, like, oh, well, why don't I have more people following me on XYZ, or how come no one's reached out to me? When I focus on things like that and I have that mindset, doubt comes in, like heavy. And so it really takes – it's a practice. It's really a practice to create and get to, like, the root of why you're creating. You know, and that might even change. You know, that might change for folks when they're creating. But for me, the creating is really, like, it's changed over time. Like, when I first started doing Afrocentric, it was really kind of like, it was really like clown, you know? And just, like, really kind of let out my own, like, anger and anxiety around the world. About the world, and later, like, I realized, I was like, you know, I'm really, like, I'm doing this for Black folks. Like, if there's a place that, like, I can acknowledge Black folks and, like, some of the things that we go through, like, then I've done my job.
Right.
You know, like, I have a comic strip about police violence, and unfortunately, I wrote that, and I was like, okay, I just got to figure out when I'm going to drop this.
Right.
Like, when something terrible happens.
Right.
You know, like, that's ill to think about, you know?
It is. It is.
That, like, I know this theme is going to come up. I know this thing is going to happen, and I'm, like, I'm basically writing about it like it's already going to happen. And so for me, it's, like, very healing to be able to, like, acknowledge, like, the feelings that a lot of us have when we see police violence, like, on video or whatever, and also just, like, you know, very the specificities of certain experiences. Like, if somebody sees themselves in the character, then I feel like I've done my job, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but that's excellent, though, because, like you say, you're doing it. You're using your talents and abilities to empower your people. And that's something we try to tell people all the time here on the Freedom Train. I know here in my city, I try to be as active as possible in my community, to be an asset to my community. And people often ask me, well, what can I do to be more active in the community? And I often tell people, well, one thing you can do is just start with your talents and abilities, things that interest you, and go from there. And, you know, that's what you've done. That's what a lot of people have done. But you found a way to weave in the social consciousness and empowerment of our people through what you do. So you definitely have to give you props for that, because it's what we need. It's what's needed. It's positive propaganda for our people. You helping us tell our own stories.
Right, exactly.
Yes, ma'am. That's one of the reasons why the Freedom Train was created, because we wanted to have a hand in telling our own story, directing our own narratives and things. So definitely, once again, got to give you your props for everything that you are doing, because it is great, and so many people are going to benefit from the information that you put in your comic book.
Man, I appreciate that so much. Again, it's like, you know, and same to you for creating. It's like, if you don't see it, you have to create it. So
exactly.
I'm sure that's how you were looking at the podcast too. So
yes, ma'am.
Game recognized game.
I got you. So, this last question before I have you give out all your social media and stuff again, but this last question is a question that we like to ask all of our guests, and we come back and record the answers. But it's just, we like to get people's thoughts on this specific question. So it basically is, if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, what would you change and what would your message to the people be?
It would probably be something like, get out, like Jordan Peele, like, get out of here.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know. What would I change?
Yeah. Certain things that you see and things like that, like, if you had the power, it just wouldn't happen anymore.
Yeah. I think my change would be less about, like, Black folks and more systemic, you know?
Yes, right. Okay.
You know? Yeah, but I guess maybe I'd paint the White House, like, red, red, black, and green.
There you go.
For starters.
There you go. Put a big statue of Marcus Garvey out front.
Send him to Africa. Like,
there you go. There you go.
Yeah, something like that.
Nah, that's cool, because it's, you got the power. It's your world. You can do whatever you want. So, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, make that systemic change. Because that's what we need. I mean, but I'm glad you even recognized that to say that. So, yes,
yeah,
ma'am.
Definitely.
So, can you give everybody your social media, your websites, the best ways they can contact you and how they can follow you and keep up with all the information that you have?
Yeah, so if folks are interested in checking out the comic strip, they can go to the Instagram or sign up on the newsletter at Afrocentric.com. And that's just an H in front of Afrocentric, no L, Afrocentric.com. And all the Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everything is just at Afrocentric.
Okay, okay. And subscribe to her YouTube channel. Subscribe to the Afrocentric YouTube channel. Make sure you, so you can follow all the stuff, because there's a lot of good information on there. And like I say, go to the website, check it out. It's great information. Subscribe to the newsletter. Be in the know. Be in the know. Jules, I am pleased. I am grateful that you decided to stop by and take a ride on the Freedom Train. Thank you. Thank you for giving us your time and your information and your energy, your passion, all of that. Thank you for what you're doing for our people with your comic book. I wish you much success, and we definitely have to have you back on here in the future.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, no problem. Thank you very much. And like I say, I will stay and make sure I keep in contact with you, because all the new stuff that happens with Afrocentric, I want to make sure the Freedom Train is a part of it, getting the message out.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, ma'am. See you later.
All right, peace.
All right, see you later. Yeah, 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 yeah. Hey, one more time. Afrocentric.com, Afrocentric.com. I've been really checking out all her information for about the last week or so, last 2 weeks really. It's pretty cool. I ain't just trying to blow no smoke. Now y'all know me, y'all already know me. Y'all know how we do on the Freedom Train. Keep it real. If I tell you to check it out, I'm telling you to check it out because I dig it. So Jules Smith is the creator and writer of Afrocentric. Hey, man, I mean, that's how we do. We bring good things, great people to the Freedom Train, and people who are about the empowerment of our people and using their talents to empower our people. So shout out to Jules. Shout out to all of our guests. Shout out to all of our supporters. Y'all the best. Y'all the greatest. Y'all just help us keep this thing rolling. Shout out to every single person who's supporting the Freedom Train and helping us grow and helping us get better. And, you know, the goal of the Freedom Train is to be Black America's number one media outlet, where we get the truth and we, you know, our people don't have to worry about why is this narrative like this and why is this narrative like that. Because the Freedom Train coming through and we're doing our thing. I'm Joseph Ward. This is the Freedom Train. Peace.